Welcome to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Our special guest is Joe Patton with Gleams. Here is your host, live from Sharp Facets Gallery, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Today, my very, very, very special guest is Dr. Joe Patton. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Gleams and the Human Resources Commission. I tell you what, it covers a lot of area here. We're going to be trying to talk about not only Gleams and what happens with Head Start, but also the Dr. Benjamin E. May's birthplace. So how are you doing today, Dr. Joe Patton?
I'm doing well, and I'm real happy to be here and happy to share with you and your radio audience that I can share that would enlighten them about me and what it is we do.
Well, actually, I'm a little disappointed today because you didn't bring your saxophone. And I know that's actually been an integral part of your life, hasn't it?
It certainly has. I started playing that saxophone at about, I was in the seventh grade, I believe. And I played in the band and enjoyed it. And I played in several small jazz and rock and roll groups at home and in the band in high school and in college. I even taught band at Macedonia High School in Blackville, South Carolina, for a while. And I played as a backup musician to several stars, like Otis Redding and Solomon Burke and Sam Cooke.
Wow.
James Brown. What happened back in the day, they would have these bands originate out of New York. And they would put several stars, Ruth Brown and several, on this billboard, and we would come south. And we were the backup band. One of the groups was called Fill Up Church and the Upsetters. And we just backed everybody up. So you got a chance to meet a lot of musicians. But the key was they wanted musicians that could read the music, could read the score.
Sure.
Because you had so many different performers, we had to sight read most of the stuff that we were doing. So it was interesting, a lot of travel, and made a few dollars doing it. I was a single young man at the time, so it was a whole lot of fun.
I bet it was a whole lot of fun. I bet there was a whole lot of partying going on back then, too.
Well, I'd have to say that that's part of that lifestyle. That's why it's good to get in and do that when you're young and get out of it.
Yeah.
When you get a little more serious in life, because that it does not lead to any beneficial adventure later on in life.
Well, I don't know. Some are still doing pretty well with it. But who was the most interesting star that you worked with since we're on this right now?
Probably the most interesting person would have been James Brown when he had J.B. James Brown, it was called Bobby Byrd, was the band director at that time. And no matter what they said about Brown, Brown was probably the hardest working person, as they said in show business. He had an ethic that he didn't allow drinking or smoking on the set. He'd dock you if you were 10 minutes late for rehearsals. If you were 10 minutes late for a performance, he didn't let you play. He was a real disciplinarian. And during that time, Brown had two or three radio stations and mm-hmm. had a Learjet and a bunch of other things. He was top of his game, but he was a very interesting fella. He had little or no education, and everything he learned on the street corner down there in Augusta dancing. But he was a pretty solid fella, and he was hard to work for.
He was hard to work for?
Hard to work for, but a very interesting guy.
Did you ever learn any of his dance moves there?
No, I couldn't dance. I couldn't dance nor sing, but I could play my saxophone. I could do that.
Play your saxophone.
Yes.
Well, that's pretty cool. I know you've had a very interesting life.
Sure.
Of course, now you are Chief Executive Officer of Gleams. But where did you grow up?
I grew up in Spartanburg, South Carolina, Spartanburg County. I was born there in the Spartanburg, what they call now Spartanburg Regional Hospital. Back then, it was called the Spartanburg Memorial Hospital, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents, my father was a businessman. Now he had a barbershop. He had a golf service station, liquor store, a mom and pop type store.
He was definitely an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. And my mother was an editor in the public schools and in college. And my grandmother also was the principal of the elementary school there. And so was my uncles and aunts. They all taught school. So I came from a family that really put emphasis on education.
Now, that was back, what year was that? Let's see.
It started about 1949. And I was in the public schools that up to about 1955 or 56. So I must have been about, I know I was in the eighth grade. I finished the eighth grade.
Right.
And in about 1955, I saw an Ebony Magazine article. It was about October of 55. That it showcased a black military academy outside of Richmond, Virginia. It was on a plantation called Bell Mead. It was the only black military academy in the history of this country. It was on the James River on a 2,600-acre plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And the school was founded, and the land was given by General Morrell, who was a Confederate general.
Mm-hmm.
And the school was founded by Mother Catherine Drexel, of Drexel Institute. She was a nun with the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament. And the priests there were members of a congregation of priests called the Holy Ghost Fathers. And they were all Jesuit.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they were the ones who really pushed a lot of education. So my parents thought they were in the process of looking for a private school for us because they felt, because of the positions they held as professionals in the school system, that my sister and I were possibly being given a free ride.
You mean you weren't learning enough?
Exactly. When I come home, they'd ask certain questions, and if my response wasn't adequate as far as they were concerned, they couldn't figure out how I got past the second semester in history, and I didn't know this, or why I couldn't diagram a sentence properly, or these kinds of things. So they were going to send me off anyway.
Now, this was back before desegregation.
It was before desegregation. It was, matter of fact, desegregation didn't come about to 65.
Okay.
54 was the separate but equal.
Mm-hmm.
So we were there when they built all of the new supposedly equal schools.
Mm-hmm.
But right after that is when I went off to the military academy. And the military academy had a couple of advantages. One, when you graduate, you had a diploma in ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
And you also had a diploma in a trade, which was, in my case, was auto mechanics, believe it or not.
Auto mechanics?
Auto mechanics. Well, my dad had a service station.
Oh, okay.
So I learned to turn the wrenches, you know.
Right.
And then I had my academic diploma. Mm-hmm. So that, when I finished in St. Edmund, the only problem that I found, it was an honor school, too. After being up there for 4 years, when I got out of high school and went to college, I went to a Presbyterian school because my family is Presbyterian.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a Presbyterian school called Knoxville College in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I stayed up there about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm majoring in music.
Mm-hmm.
And because I played my saxophone. I played more in the frat houses and over at the University of Tennessee than I did. I didn't even go to class. I just getting off a gig.
See, this is the problem with private schools. I went to private school, okay,
is that
you are so structured in private school that by the time you go to college, you're like, party.
Exactly. Exactly.
I had the same problem.
I couldn't understand why I didn't lock the doors at night and why I didn't have to be in at a certain time. So I took advantage of that freedom.
That's right. I understand that.
I had a good time.
Hey, we're here with Dr. Joe Patton. When we come back, we're going to talk some more, so don't you go away. If you want to give us a call and ask a question, just give us a call, 229-7984. I'm Ann Eller here with Dr. Joe Patton. We'll be right back.
My cycle humps, ready to race.
Gold dust at my feet, on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime, from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
You're here with us at Meet Me at the Diner, your host Ann Eller. Our special guest today is Joe Patton with Leans. Here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking to Dr. Joe Patton. I'm sure you know him. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Gleams Human Resources Commission. We're talking about him growing up. We talked about him just going off to college in Knoxville after graduating from Military Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you went a little crazy.
Oh, absolutely. I went just more than some people could call that, just out of my mind. I had a good time. I had a newfound freedom.
You know what? And I'll bet you really, when you look back on it, do you really regret it?
Absolutely.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
I regret it for the simple reason. I don't regret it as far as...
life experience?
Yeah, what I've been able to do.
But from your parents.
But from the fact that my parents were paying for that, and I was up there living on the fat of the land. I mean, I was having a good time, and after a year in Knoxville College, I may have had 15 hours. Credit
Ooh,
hours.
That's not too good.
Yeah, and it takes 30 to get to be a sophomore.
So you were looking at a repeat there.
Absolutely. So I joined the Army because I had to go somewhere.
You knew you had to go somewhere.
Before them grades got home. Because my daddy would have killed me, and I understood that. You know, that's just the way it was back in the day.
Yeah.
And I joined the Army because I could soldier. I had been in that military school 4 years. And I knew how to soldier.
Now, what year would that have been going into the military?
I went to the military in 1962.
That was during the height of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, just at the beginning, just before it started. The Vietnam War got hot August the 9th, 1964,
mm-hmm.
when they had the major airstrike.
Right.
And I was in Korea at the time.
Were you? Wow.
Yeah, and they sent a bunch of Koreans. I was with the 1st Cav. There, and they sent a bunch of the 1st Cav soldiers over to Vietnam to do for land survey, to get some trig markers, some land identification, so they could bring the troops and make guns in.
Sure.
So I got caught up in that, but I had already served 12 and a half months of a 13-month tour.
Mm-hmm.
So my stint in Vietnam was only, it was like weeks, like 8-10 weeks or something.
Yes.
And then I rotated back to Fort Bragg with the 82nd Airborne 18th Corps up at Fort Bragg. But I knew how to soldier. And besides, I thought I was special anyway because I had last name Patton. And General Patton was a martyr. I mean, everybody in the military understood General Patton. So I figured if I stayed in there long enough, I'd have made general, I thought, anyway. But I did have fun, and I got out of the military, and I found it. I had too much education for the kind of jobs they had available,
mm-hmm.
and not enough for the kind of job that I wanted.
What did you want to do?
I wanted to be a professional person like folks in my family. I wanted to go to work with a suit and tie on and wanted my weekends off and stuff, and I drove a truck for a little while, a tractor trailer too. Worked at a bank, cleaning up, mm-hmm. cleaning out teller's cages in the evening and polishing the brass on the front of the bank and running in delivering medicine for drugstore. I did all kinds of jobs. Worked at a department store.
Couldn't you do anything with your music to make money then?
I played a little bit around home.
Okay.
Around home. I was trying to get back in the good graces of my family. And they felt that saxophone might have been a deterrent for my not, doing
might
well.
Might have been the devil.
Yeah. Because that was the excuse I gave for not going to class in the morning. I was on a gig at night, and I couldn't get up in the morning, But when I was a freshman in college, I was making, you know, $200-$300 a week.
Mm-hmm.
When most people weren't making me $50 and $60 a week.
Sure.
You know, you play the fraternity parties and all at my college, which was Knoxville, and then we were right across town from the University of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the opportunity to play over there, too. And, of course, it was all segregated, but most of the entertainment at UT was black entertainment anyway, you know.
Okay.
But, I just left the saxophone to kind of weekends at home. There was a bunch of band directors that had a little group, a little jazz group,
mm-hmm.
and I worked with them, and we played the country clubs and so forth around home. And I did that for about a year, and I realized that I might have to go back to school. Because I'm not going to be able to. All of my friends were off on the weekends. They were teaching school now.
Mm-hmm.
See, I put. That's
so,
4 years.
Did you want to be a teacher?
My mother wanted me to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the teaching game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I grew up in it. And they were the only. Back before integration,
mm-hmm.
there were very few jobs that a black person. That aspired to be professional could get.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, prime job, rather, was teaching. We had one or two preachers in town. We might have had one doctor, maybe two. Might have had a pharmacist there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, if you majored in anything in college other than education, and if you look back at it, the HBCUs, which is the historically black colleges and universities, they all were liberal arts colleges with a very strong education base.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where you could be. And in your affluent black neighborhoods, and the leaders in the community were your teachers and principals, school administrators.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you didn't have any other choice. Now, what would I do with a degree in hospital administration in 1958 or 1962,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was unheard of. I mean, there's no way you could get a job.
So what do you think? What do you think is the difference between, you came from a family that mm-hmm. was all about education and everything. What's the difference with today's youth, particularly in the black community, versus then when you were so focused on education? What about today, Dr. Patton?
Well, as I look back, I was focused on education because I was a product of an educational environment.
Mm-hmm.
We often work with our young people, and the name of the game is your environment once becomes a part of you.
Mm-hmm.
We have lost touch with our young people. We have allowed them to watch a lot of television. We have allowed them a lot of freedom to do what they want to, and they pick the people that they
want to hang with. Mm-hmm.
They even pick the people that they want to mentor them, and in most cases, or in a lot of cases, it's not someone that we would have chosen for them. So, you know, I think the key was our parents, especially in my case, they were vigilant. They made sure that my sister and I told the line, and they made sure that we understood that you can't graduate from high school and live like you live in our house.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to make enough money to do that. So somewhere along the line, you're going to have to do one or two things. You're going to have to get yourself a good basic liberal arts education, which will allow you to do many things.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or you're going to have a skill, plumbing, auto mechanics, or music. And, of course, back then, we'd have to go north to get a music degree to Berkeley or Juilliard
mm-hmm.
to get a music degree without all that basic education.
You know? Sure.
So basic education was involved in that, too.
So do you think that, what is the problem today? Is it that we've lost touch? Is it our parenting that we've let, is it this generation, the generation before? It just seems like we're kind of spiraling here.
I think it's parenting. Well, I'm not going to put all this on parents now.
No? Okay.
But, you know, parents need to be a little bit concerned about where they live. You sure. know, who your children hang out with.
Sure.
What kind of environment are you creating? You can't party all night at your house and smoke reefer and have all your friends up in there doing whatever they want to do. And your children are exposed to that because they think that's the right thing to do.
So it's an example.
Yeah, it's an example. It's the environment we create does not present itself to the children the way that the environment presented itself to us in reference to achieving. You know, and some children, no matter what, they don't want to live in the project. They don't want to be impoverished. So that in itself is motivation for them to get an education so they can bring themselves out of that. But for the most part, our children take the easy way.
Sure.
The way that's fun, the way that's relaxing, and the way that they can achieve without putting forth a lot of effort. And with my children, I made sure that they understood that flipping hamburgers ain't gonna get it. You can't pay a $2,000 a month mortgage flipping hamburgers. It ain't gonna happen.
That's right.
And so I think it's the parents have a lot. And you don't have to browbeat the children. Another thing is in the schools. I have found that the guidance counselors in the school played a major part on how I grew up. Because they would talk to you, and they would look at your permanent records and see where you had your A's and B's and explain to you what your aptitude was and what you could do well according to those scores and where you needed to focus. Nowadays, I think kids go along all the way up through high school before they really, and some of them are in college and have not declared a major because no one's coached them.
Well, when we come back, we're going to join South Carolina News. We're going to pick up this conversation. Yes, we're talking to Dr. Joe Patton. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984, 229-7984. South Carolina News is in progress.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk Radio Station.
Welcome back to Meet Me at the Diner, your host, Ann Ella. Our special guest today is Joe Patton with Leans. Here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are talking with Dr. Joe. We're talking about education. We were just talking about how we get things, maybe what I should say is how we get things back on track for our youth. We have so many youth that we were just talking about role models. We were talking about the pants. You and I were just talking off air about the pants hanging down. They can't walk. You know, they're waddling along, holding up their pants. Why do we think that that is good? Why do they think it's good? Not me. I hate it. But anyways.
Well, and I hate it too. And the people in my organization, they gleams. And I notice a lot of folks call in and they want to know about employment and stuff at Gleams. In order to become employed at Gleams, you have to meet certain indicators. And the first one is a visual indicator when we look at you. You know,
you can't have your pants hanging down?
No. No, we had a gentleman there that was my deputy, Mr. Davis. He stopped you in a restaurant and asked you to pull your pants up.
Good for him.
It just wasn't something that he allowed, and you certainly couldn't participate in any of our programs like that. And I think the bottom line is, again, that we have to keep some kind of control over our children's associates. They choose people to follow. They choose their role models. We have to let them understand that that's not cool. You know, you can't make it. You got to be able in life to operate in both the boardroom and the pool room. Now, somewhere in wearing your pants down beneath your navel might be something that's accepted in the pool room. When you go in the boardroom, you got to pull them up, and you got to know when to do that. And that's the ability of education is the ability to walk in unfamiliar territory with securities. In other words, notice your environment, what's around you, and adjust your habits and your actions to what seems to be prevailing. And if you can do that, you can make it through life. We have forgotten these children. We are working, trying to get a hold of that almighty dollar. The children come home from school. They hang out in the hood, or up on the playground, under the basketball goals or somewhere. And they pick and see that trait about wearing pants down around your navel and stuff, that came from the penitentiary,
mm-hmm.
where they take the belts and things away
sure.
from these inmates. And in some cases, they have to hold them up because, you know, those penitentiary denims are not tailored. They just right. give them to them.
Right.
So, but when they come out in the street, they wear the trousers like that. And our kids think that they are the big guy on the block. First of
well,
all,
that's
they've been
to look at as the symbol to emulate.
Emulate, exactly. And we got to get a hold on that. Parents have to say more often when you leave. You know, my daddy, when we came along, there were certain things that you could wear. But my father used to tell us when you leave home. I remember back in the day they had these peg pants.
Mm-hmm.
And we wore peg pants. Elvis brought them in.
Right, Elvis, right.
And my daddy used to tell me, he said, now you can wear them around the house here, but you can't go out in public with peg pants on. And I thought that was awful because I wanted some peg pants with some little flaps on the back pockets like Elvis used to wear. And he said he couldn't do it.
Well, how about even girls with mini skirts and everything? You know, Mom and Dad used to say, you're not going outside in that.
Exactly. Exactly. There has to be some control.
And well, have parents abdicated the control?
Yes.
How can we change this for today's world, to compete in today's world?
Well, parenting is a serious, serious, serious position that one puts himself in. And parents need to understand that once those children are born, they're yours until they die or you die. they're yours.
Now, and hopefully you die before they die.
Hopefully.
Yes.
And everything that happens to them between those two things, you will have something to do with. It will affect you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make life easier for yourself mm-hmm. and for your child, or you can just let them go ahead and do whatever it is they want to do. I'm thinking that we have in Gleams with our Head Start, we have, pardon me, parenting classes where we talk to parents and give them ideas of methods that they can use to help them raise their children. The churches have to be involved. You know, in the black community, a number of the social activities and so forth take place within these churches. Our parents spend an inordinate amount of time in these churches.
Yes, they do.
These churches need to mentor these young people. They're not going to like what you have to say to them, but when they get to school and they get up in life later on, they will realize that somewhere along the line they have been exposed to protocols. They've been exposed to what they should do and how they should behave. I heard a man at a funeral last week stand up and say his father-in-law had passed, and he said, you know, he took me in when I married to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me in and didn't know anything about me other than what she said. But little did he know, I was attracted to her, and he used a word that I can't use.
Okay.
And I'm saying, this is in a church. This is at a funeral. But then I'm thinking, well, he doesn't know any better. I mean, he can't know any better.
Right.
To know that was inappropriate. Now, everybody kind of snickered when he said it.
Sure.
But the bottom line was, he told us that he was a bouncer at a club, and this is what he did for a living. And he ran into several, as he called them, broads or something, you know, and he was attracted to this. But then he was making remarks to remember his father-in-law. And I think it was just because of the environment that he grew up in that he thought that was acceptable. Someone even told him that there are some older people in here who mm-hmm. don't understand that.
Right.
So I'm thinking it's all about, we need to create that environment to change We need to stay involved in the community. You know, it was Hillary Clinton or somebody that used to say she got it from an old African thing. It takes a village.
To raise a child.
Yeah. I remember her saying it once in some campaign or something, but she's telling the truth there. It does take all of us. And as a folks, when they come in your store, if they're not dressed appropriately, you have the right to turn them around or
sure.
deny them entrance into your facility. This is your place.
That's right.
You know.
But don't you think that as a society, though, we don't do that anymore? I mean,
no.
How many times do we see children in a restaurant that are just wreaking havoc on the restaurant, and you want to look at the parent and say, could you please control your child?
Yeah.
And we don't do it. And
well,
we don't do it.
We're afraid.
Yeah.
Because the young children now, man, these young people now will hurt you. I mean, they'll come back and wait on you outside or go out there and key your car or throw a brick through your window. We're afraid.
Right. That's no way to live, though,
no,
is it?
No, it's not. It's not. It's
and
not
what does
way.
That say about the future of our society?
It's going to Tommy in a handbasket. It's disappearing. Look, my father would be absolutely appalled if he was to come up out of his grave now.
Do you think that's why we all, as we get older, we say, hey, it's okay, take me anytime? Do you
right.
think so?
Exactly. Exactly, I'm ready. I mean, this is not a place that's very comfortable. If you have lived the way I was brought up, this is not comfortable. You know, back nowadays, children don't think twice about throwing rocks at the police.
Or how about all this sex that's going on, Dr. Jones?
That's even worse. I mean, if you got caught with a centerfold in a Jet magazine, I got a whipping. If they found it, I'd have to hide it under the rug.
I mean, under the rug. Now, there's an interesting place.
Yeah, well, that's where you put things you didn't want your
parents to find? Okay.
Yeah, because they were a little older, and they didn't do much squatting down or getting on the floor. You know, they had to be something that they could reach, mostly up, from chest up, for them to find it. But, now we had certain things that we just didn't. Our parents couldn't hear us use profanity.
Mm-hmm.
And if they heard someone in the neighborhood or one of your friends use profanity, they barred them from your house. And they told you you were not to associate with them. That's control.
And not only that, just the common courtesy.
Absolutely.
The common courtesy that we deal with right now. Hey, we've had some great calls here. We are going to take some calls here at the end. So give us a call, 229-7984. We're supposed to be talking about Gleams. We're supposed to be talking about Head Start. Actually, we're getting to know Dr. Joe Patton here, and we'll have to have him back to talk more about this. Don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Monday, happy days.
You're here with us at Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller and special guest Joe Patton with Gleams. Here is your host, Ann Eller.
Well, we are right back here with Dr. Joe Patton. We've been talking about his philosophy, and of course it all relates to what he's doing today. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Gleams. One of the questions we keep having calls, Jeff says, please go over this, Ann, is people all say, can I get a job at Gleams? And what do you have to say, Dr. Patton?
Well, I know that there is a lot of interest in the community with reference to jobs anywhere, but specifically Gleams. There are a number of people who would love to become employed by Gleams. But Gleams, there is a strict criteria, you know, put on us from the federal government. You're spending federal funds, and you're working with children. You have to qualify. There has to be drug testing. There has to be FBI check, fingerprint check, and there has to be a SLED check. And you have to pass all of those. And the drug screening continues during the employment at Gleams because we can't have folks who have problems in those areas working around little children.
Sure.
That's against the law. So there are some positions available. Then when it comes down to our teachers and teachers' assistants, 50% of our teachers are required to have AA degrees. By 2013, then we're going to require a bachelor's degree shortly thereafter to be able to teach in one of the Head Start centers. So that alone disqualifies a number of people. And those aren't rules that we make. Those are rules that are handed to us by the funding source when we receive the money.
Sure.
So if a person qualifies, we have a website, and most people know the website. Our Human Resources Department is always open to receive applications and resumes. And the only thing I can say, if you are a person who thinks they can meet any of those indicators, then we'll be happy to receive an application or a resume for possible employment at Gleams.
Okay, then. And what is that website?
The website is www.gleams, that's GLEAMNSHRC.org.
Okay. So check out the website. That's going to be the best way. See if you meet the minimum requirements to start the process, right? And I'm sure all that is right there.
That's correct.
That is correct. You know, we had a call from Anita Davis down there in Savannah Lakes. She says she's looking for entertainment, jazz and blues band for Friday nights at a club. But she also says a black success story is what our young people need to hear, a real one, not these sanitized versions.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that, Dr. Joe?
Well, you know, Ann, I'm happy to think that she characterizes what she's hearing as a black success story. That makes me feel pretty good. I don't know if my children would think I'm that successful or not, but and some other
every
folks.
Time they want to borrow money, right?
Yeah. Oh, they always think I'm successful. Right? But you know, I came up as a young person that was around people who were successful, I thought. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be counted in that number. And I want young people to know that I know how to act. You know, as I mentioned to you before, both in the boardroom and the pool room.
On the stage. There you go.
On the stage performing. And you have to hone your tools. You got to work on your skills in order to do these things. And I'm happy to share my story with anybody that wants to listen, because I think it's unique in a certain way. But at the same time, you can notice in my story that I was focused the whole time. I'm 68 years old now, and at the end of my career. But I'm focused now, if my health allows me, as to what I'm going to continue to do to contribute to society and help relieve some of the distress conditions of some of the people that I run into every day. I'm focused and committed, and I'm glad to share my story with anybody.
Well, it's a really good story. She also says we need more Gleams participation in McCormick. Are there any plans for down in McCormick?
You know, we serve McCormick, and we have an office in McCormick, and we have Head Start in McCormick. And two or three members of my board are from McCormick, especially the chairman of your council, Mr. Charles Jennings, is on my board. And he's forever. And I don't want you to misunderstand this. In every board meeting, he always makes sure that McCormick is considered.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we get, whenever the funds, because you know we're fixing to suffer a bunch of cuts based on our president's State of the Union address.
Sure.
But whatever dollars come into Gleams, you can rest assured if there are any additional programs that can be provided for the residents of McCormick, we will do that. And if you mention it to Mr. Jennings, where the need may be, he'll certainly bring it to the commission meetings.
Well, there you go. So that's a good one. Now, you know, Gleams and Head Start, of course, concentrates on what age group children?
Well, excuse me. We have early Head Start, which is 0 to 3, and the regular Head Start, which is we concentrate on the 4-year-olds and 3 and 4-year-olds.
Now, the regular Head Start, there is a big concern, I in education, we keep hearing this. If we could get all our children to read at, I don't remember what age,
yeah.
But if they're ready to go when they get into school, it makes all the difference to their future.
Yes, absolutely. You know, Head Start, historically, was created under the guidance of Sergeant Shriver, who just recently passed,
yes.
And signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson. And it was first held in the summertime in the basements of churches in most cases. But it was designed to take the child out of the home environment into a separate environment away from the home and acclimate him to living away from his parents and away from home. To cater to and tend the cognitive growth, social growth, and monitor the health of that young person. And a lot of times we use their family members as cadre, as facilitators and caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
And those folks were given jobs, and that took them off of the welfare rolls and so forth, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was mostly play and mostly supervised activities, play. Now Head Start has said we need literacy. Why should children be away from home from 8 to 2:30 in the afternoon or so, and nobody's teaching them anything that's going to help them when they go to school? And we want them so they're tested when they come in, and they're tested when they get ready to leave to transition over to the public schools, so that we can bring their skills, their literacy skills, up to par, or bring them up to a level that they can adjust easily when they start in the first grade.
Right. You know, I was just thinking about what you said about back in the, that would have been back in the 60s, right, when Head Start started. Do you think if we had had this emphasis on the family back in the 60s, do you think we'd be where we were today? Maybe? I mean, as far as educating, parenting, and this type of thing, and put more emphasis on that?
I think we'd be, if we had done that back in the 60s, if it had been really, really taken under consideration and possibly given to some major universities for them to do some research and study, I think we would be light years ahead of where we are today, especially when it comes to controlling of those that aren't ready to make those decisions for themselves.
Right.
I think it would have been a blessing to have done that. And now it's real hard to reinvent the wheel. It's hard to train, to impart new habits on folks
that
have been used
to. That's what I'm saying, yes.
Yeah, it's tough to do.
Sure, because for so many years, we're almost out of time, but for so many years, we have said, well, let the schools raise the children. We'll let the schools do this. And now what we're finding is we need to go back to parental control.
Exactly. Exactly. And my children can tell you that they figure I'm a tool of the horn or something. Because I didn't let them have a lot of time on their own. And it paid off.
Sure it does.
Because I've got 5 children. And 3 of them are attorneys, like their mother, and working and making a good living. One of them coaches football, basketball, and teaches mathematics. And another one has his own business. So, and I haven't had to go to a prison or a jail or anything. And one of my sons got caught, and he told the officer, just lock me up. Please don't call my daddy.
There you go. Hey, this is WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. We're going to stay here just a minute before we finish up. We had a call from Bertha Mix. She says, you're a great storyteller. You need to set it down. She sang as a backup to Earl Williams, the Duke of Earl. She's a retired librarian that would like to entertain again. So how about that, Dr. Joe?
That sounds all right to me. Now, entertaining again, I'm a little short of breath right now, but I still own a saxophone. And if some of these folks would get a hold of me when I'm off the air, it'd be fun to try to put together a group of old musicians.
Oldies but goodies.
Yeah, oldies but goodies.
There
yeah.
you go. What's your telephone number if somebody wants to call you, Dr. J?
864-223. Thank you. And 8434.
8434.
And just ask for me.
Okay, just ask for Dr. Joe Patton. Dr. Joe Patton, it has been a pleasure having you here. We're going to have to sit down again and maybe talk a little bit more about Gleams and all the programs that are available over there to help people in today's world. But I think we talked about a lot of interesting facts. Thanks so much for coming with us today.
Thank you also, Ann. It's always a pleasure. And I'll be available whenever you call me.
All right. That sounds great. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood. We're going to join CNN News in Progress, and then stay tuned for Radio News America. Bye-bye, everybody.